I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. The journalist Mignon McLaughlin wrote, "A successful marriage requires falling in love many times, always with the same person." More than 2 million couples get married every year in the United States, and when they do, they create extended families of in-laws. As two local scholars observe, success in marriage also requires figuring out how to love the family members affiliated with one's spouse. Jeffrey Greif and Michael Woolley have written a new book that explores the often complicated dynamics of in-law relationships at various stages and ages, examining the challenges and cherishments of this fundamental dimension of married life. The book is called In-Law Relationships: Mothers, Daughters, Fathers, and Sons. Jeffrey Greif and Michael Woolley join me after the news. Hey, everybody. Glad to have you on board. I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday. Our topic today is in-laws and how the relationship between children who are married and the families of their spouses are affected and informed by a number of different factors. Parents of the person you hold dear matter while you're dating. They matter while you're married. They matter when you have kids yourself, and they matter when those parents are of the age when they need care from you. A new book looks at those different stages, as well as the effects of age, gender, sexual preference, and other factors that influence the nature and success of in-law relationships. The book is called In-Law Relationships: Mothers, Daughters, Fathers, and Sons. My guests today are the authors, Dr. Jeffrey Greif and Dr. Michael Woolley of the University of Maryland School of Social Work, which is based at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. We'd love to hear your story about your in-laws, be they older or younger. Do you get along pretty well? And if so, why do you think that is? And do you get along maybe not so well? Well, let's talk about that too. Give us a call or drop us an email or tweet us to let us know. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWYPR. Jeffrey Greif and Michael Woolley join us on Zoom. Hey guys, welcome back.
Thanks for having us on, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
So, Jeff Greif, last time you guys were on, we talked about siblings. You had written a book in 2016 about the relationships between brothers and sisters, and now it's in-laws. And I understand that this is, to some extent, an understudied topic in your line of work. Why do you think that is? And what did you hope to do in terms of filling the gap in the research?
Well, this is Mike. You know, most family research has focused on spousal relationships, and we've got a lot of research about parent-child relationships. And this probably grows out of the history of clinical work, working with families, all the way back to Sigmund Freud, who focused on parent-child relationships as critical to human development. And then we have some research about siblings in childhood, but there was a lot less research about adult sibling relationships across the lifespan, and that sort of inspired the last book. And sort of growing out of that, we recognized there was very little research about in-law relationships in terms of family dynamics and what those relationships look like. And so that's what inspired this work.
And Jeff, evidently the research that does exist about in-laws tended to concentrate on mothers-in-law and daughters-in-law. They seemed almost obsessed with that side of the equation. Why do you think that is? What particular place do mothers and daughters hold in this area of research?
Yeah, Tom, you're absolutely right that all the research focuses on women. All the research on in-laws has been done by women. Very little had been done about fathers-in-law and sons-in-law, and we wanted to shine a light on that. I think the reason is that, as we found in our research, the women are more central in these relationships. They draw more of the attention. They do more of the heavy lifting in many cases, in the interior of the family. We want to talk about roles of men and women in society. But when it comes to looking into the interior of the family, it's the women in general, not in every family, who are doing more of that lifting. And so that's why women necessarily were the first line of research, I think, on this topic. And we're hoping to shine some light on men, both fathers-in-law and sons-in-law, and in the whole area of in-law relationships in general, just to call people's attention to it and the importance it plays across generations.
Yeah, and Mike, there are, as you demonstrate in this book, there are differences between fathers-in-laws and sons-in-law, as opposed to mothers and daughters-in-law. You report that fathers-in-law, generally speaking, are pretty positive about their relationships with their sons-in-law, less so on the side of mothers and daughters-in-law. Is there any particular reason for that? I mean, why do you think that is?
Yeah, Tom, you got that right. And to put a little more sort of subtle description on those differences, the male in-law relationships tend to kind of be clustered in the middle of the continuum, you know, pretty good and maybe a little struggling. The relationships, the in-law relationships between women tend to show up more on the extremes. These women describe them as tremendous, positive, really important, central to their lives, or very troubled and very difficult. And we think that has something to do with those traditional gendered roles in the multi-generational family that Jeff just described. These are the folks who, well, biologically, they birth the children and then they raise the children. And so women are central to the multi-generational process in terms of having and raising children and grandparenting. And we also kind of say, although the traditional mother-in-law jokes aren't fair, and our data kind of show these relationships are largely positive. And in fact, both sons and daughters and sons and daughters-in-law have stronger relationships with their mothers and mothers-in-law than fathers and fathers-in-law. That the old jokes about mother-in-laws emerges from a mother-in-law of a son who's married to a woman and has a child. That mother-in-law is a sort of has a difficult time as a grandparent being involved in those grandchildren, because the mother of those children is more central to that, the mother of those children, if that makes sense.
It gets complicated with all these terms, you know, mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, the mother of the mother. But the book is fascinating. That's Mike Woolley. He and Jeff Greif have written a book called In-Law Relationships, Mothers, Daughters, Fathers, and Sons. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Would love to hear from you, listeners, about your experience with your in-laws. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday_WYPR. This is your opportunity to either ruin Thanksgiving dinner for the rest of your lives or pick up some brownie points. Give us a call. Let us know what you think when it comes to the in-laws in your life. Let's go to the phones to Tim, who's calling from Baltimore. Tim, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me. I had a question about mother-in-laws that suffer with BPD and they're prone to splitting relationships. They'll tell one side of the story to the husband or another side of the story to their daughter. And what would be the best approach to go forward with that?
All right. So BPD, borderline personality disorder. Which one of you guys wants to take that one?
You know, Mike, I'll try a little bit here. That for your listening audience is a fairly significant psychiatric diagnosis. Personality disorders have a profound kind of widespread effect on a person's social and interpersonal relationships. And, you know, our data is a cross-sectional. We did a big survey. We did interviews. Our data are not what are called clinical data. They're not focused on people who have serious psychosocial emotional problems. And so I don't know our data would have a lot to say here, except Jeff and I are both longtime clinicians. What I would say is a mother-in-law with such a diagnosis is going to be have ups and downs. They're going to be depressed and they're going to be over the moon about things. They're going to be irritable and they're going to be difficult. And boy, it requires children and children-in-law to work together, to stay well connected and communicate clearly about how to manage this relationship, and not let this mother or mother-in-law's roller coaster emotional or social life impair their ability to have a strong bond as a couple.
Yeah, and I can just add to that. I think that it's important to remember that most adult relationships, not to include children's relationship, we're talking about adults here. Most of us have ambivalent and ambiguous relationships with our family members. So even among the sample where people were getting along very well, there was a little bit of concerns about walking on eggshells, being careful. And we have a specific chapter about what to do about difficult relationships and also about how to improve the already good relationships. And there are four quick things that we can get into. One is look at your family history and see how much of this you are intellectually and cognitively aware of. Secondly, think about boundary building in the family. Always an important way to go. Thirdly, think about how you want to communicate with each other in the family. And fourthly, what is the family narrative that you want to leave going forward for the next generation?
Yeah, and that's interesting, Mike, you know, the boundaries that you talk about. And you, right at the very beginning of the book, you say when people aren't sure how to act with each other, they struggle with the relationship. And when it comes to setting boundaries, I would think that if you do that in too forceful a manner, that could really sour things, that could really seem too demanding or too obstreperous, you know? I mean, how do you set boundaries? I mean, do you sit down and have a family meeting and say, you know, okay, here's what you're allowed to say, here's what you're allowed to think, here's what you're allowed to do? I mean, that's trickier than it seems to me.
Well, Tom, that is a terrific question, and it touches on a lot of different dynamics of these relationships. And boundaries are an important, well-documented thing in all family relationships. And one of the boundaries that Jeff just sort of mentioned was the couple creating a boundary around themselves so they can have a positive, intimate, trusting relationship. They can learn to go to each other when they need support or help, whereas they probably used to go to their parents or other people. But you're right, Tom, you can't exclude. I mean, Jeff mentioned that some of these relationships really struggle. About 10, 15, 20% in our sample really struggled. And one of the things that's a sign of a struggling relationship is the in-laws who feel left out, who feel excluded. And so it's really important for the couple to make an effort to include both sets of parents in holidays. As a matter of fact, one of the things that 20-25% of the adult son and daughter-in-law couples reported, they really struggled to balance each of the sets of parents, the parents and the in-laws. And so them consciously doing that is important. And that also is instructive for the parents and the in-laws. You know, you also mentioned, Tom, how complicated this is. Each set of grandparents or parents are also in-laws to the other. So it's all very complicated. But the parents and the in-laws being conscious of leaving space for this couple is the other side of the couple creating boundaries.
Yeah, we should mention before we go to a break here that the marriage rate in the United States, as well as the divorce rate, both rates are down. As a matter of fact, they're at all-time lows in 2019. This is reported by the Census Bureau in November of last year. For every 1,000 unmarried adults, only 33 got married, and that number 10 years ago was 35. So it's going down. But divorce has also been falling quite fast. It's hit a record low. For every 1,000 marriages in the last year, only 14.9% ended in divorce. But one other key factor to that, and you guys mentioned this in your book, there's a study in Minnesota that said 18% of respondents in that study cited in-laws as a reason for their divorce. So that's not a good sign. And it just shows that this is an important and complicated topic, which we will take up again on the other side of this quick break. The book is called In-Law Relationships: Mothers, Daughters, Fathers, and Sons. My guests today are the authors, Dr. Jeffrey Greif and Dr. Michael Woolley of the University of Maryland School of Social Work at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. To join our conversation, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWIPR. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on our show tomorrow, an update from Annapolis in the General Assembly. We're going to concentrate on tax policy. My guests will be Delegate Stephanie Smith from Baltimore, Delegate Vaughn Stewart from Montgomery County, and Ned Atwater, a local restaurateur. They are part of the Fair Funding Coalition, which is working on a few different pieces of legislation that will change the state tax code. Plus, we'll have a conversation with a physician from Los Angeles on the experience of her hospital during the early weeks of this year when LA was at the epicenter of the pandemic here in the United States. Dr. Jen Chang joins me tomorrow on Midday as well. If you've just joined us today, we're talking about in-laws and the exigencies that can make relationships with sons and daughters-in-law either rewarding or, shall we say, complicated. My guests are two faculty members of the University of Maryland School of Social Work at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. Dr. Jeffrey Greif is a professor. Dr. Michael Woolley is an associate professor at the school. The new book is called In-Law Relationships: Mothers, Daughters, Fathers, and Sons. To join our conversation, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWIPR. You can tweet me at @TomHallWIPR. So, Jeff Greif, we have an email from a listener named Anne who says, "My mother-in-law and I have a difficult relationship. Sometimes it's great, sometimes not so great, and the tension only grows when she moved in with our family because of the pandemic. She's older than my parents and as old as my grandparents. The difficulty comes with the generational difference, whereas she wants to be like my mother, but has the mannerisms of my grandmother. We butt heads often on child rearing and how to keep a home. My husband often feels like the middleman. My husband gets along with my father because their age difference is not as large. I constantly struggle with being a newlywed and learning how to be married and raise my young family. While I appreciate her support, it can be very intrusive." So, Jeff, the listener brings up a number of things. First of all, the generational differences and the generational aspect of this, which you write a lot about, as well as the stage difference, if I might put it that way. In other words, it's different when you're a newlywed and you have little kids, as opposed to when you've been married for 20 or 30 years and things have had time to settle in. What's your response to Anne's email?
Yeah, I think Anne raises a number of good points that we can get to. One of the points that I think is important to think about right here is the role of her spouse. And we need to be aware that there's always a third person involved in either he or she or they are highly present or they're in the background, but they play a part in these relationships. We also get into the issue of, as I was saying before, family history. There's something she's seeing in her mother-in-law that reminds her of other people in her own family. And that's something to always be aware of, what is going on inside of me that is perhaps resonating positively or not so positively with somebody that I am interacting with. And I think the third thing to think about is, where is she hoping this relationship can go, and how can she build a relationship with her that will focus on the positives, on maybe it's only one thing, but hopefully it's a number of things that they have in common, including her son, her husband, depending upon Anne's husband, obviously her mother-in-law's son. So there are a number of interlocking triangles that can be looked at from her perspective. And again, thinking about 2 or 3 years from now, looking ahead, how does she want to look back on this relationship and say that she has handled it? The starting of a new family and staying connected to one's old family, as Michael was saying, is one of the challenges that everybody has. How do we grow up yet stay connected to our family of origin? So we have a number of interlocking themes here that are really important.
And Mike Willie, talk about a guy with interlocking themes. I want you to tell the story of Bill Wyman, who is familiar to many folks as a bass player with the Rolling Stones. But he occupies any number of different titles in this panoply of in-laws. He was simultaneously a father-in-law and a son-in-law, right? Tell us about his story.
So I'm gonna tell you a little brief anecdote, and then I'm gonna toss this to Jeff. Jeff is a musician. Jeff recorded music back when he was young. He's a huge Rolling Stones and Beatles fan. I was too. Jeff's a little older than me. I saw the Rolling Stones when they toured America in 1975, which was advertised as the last tour of the Americas. I still have the T-shirt. And Bill Wyman has a complicated family relationship in terms of in-laws, but Jeff contributed that to the book. So I'm gonna throw it to him.
All right.
I love telling this story, Tom. And Bill Wyman's an interesting character. When he was, I'm going to say, in his 40s for the purposes of this discussion, he married a 16-year-old or 17-year-old woman. That marriage did not last, but that woman's mother so then married Bill Wyman's son. And that's how Bill Wyman became both the son-in-law of that mother of his wife and also the father-in-law when she then married his son. And that's the interesting double role. I don't think there are too many other examples of that. None of those marriages has prevailed, by the way.
Yeah, my Lord. I mean, talk about keeping it in the family. And it's fascinating. And this whole notion of family versus friends is fascinating to me as well, because, you know, you get married and all of a sudden you're at these family events with people who, before you met your wife, you never knew before, you know, and it is all considered one big happy family. At least we like to fool ourselves into thinking that that's what it is. But is there a reason, Mike Woolley, for people to try to impose, if you will, the strictures or the joys and heartbreaks of family on people who aren't family? I mean, by generational bloodline, at least they're very often very nice people that you happen to have met because you fell in love with a particular person. I mean, is it important to establish this extended family with all of the in-laws? Does that matter, or can everybody just be friends?
So, boy, there's that. And also, you asked terrific, complicated questions, Tom. That question about should you try to impose your family rituals, your approach to holidays, your belief system on this new family that's been connected by marriage to your family? No, that's actually one of the things that probably gets in-laws in trouble. However, both sides do need to learn to accept and tolerate and be flexible. And one of the things I thought of as you were talking is there's a little, in some ways, there's a trajectory to these relationships. And what we found in the data is when in-laws reported they didn't really know the child-in-law before the marriage, that is predictive of one of those in-law relationships that really struggle. And so, and what we thought about with that data is, you know, back in the day, people were born, grew up, lived, got married, had children, grandparents in the same community. And people, in-laws knew each other because they lived in the same community. And that's just not true anymore. We all move around. We go to different places for education, for careers. And so this is the lesson for young adults looking to get married. Introduce this person to your parents. Even if you've already decided to get married, introduce them to your parents and wait another week. It's an awkward start for people to find out this person's in my family the same day you met them.
Yeah, it really is. And also, this book concentrates on married people. But you allude to the fact that there are fewer people, and we talked about this before the break, fewer people getting married now than ever before. What does marriage mean in terms of this study, as opposed to people who are cohabitating, maybe very much in love, you know, are sharing their lives together, but have for whatever reason decided not to go through the civil or religious step of being married?
Yeah, Tom, this is Jeff. Our position is that we don't really necessarily feel that partnerships are any different in terms of commitment than marriage. But putting on our researcher's hat, we had to draw a line someplace as to who was going to be in our sample. And we thought that once somebody had married, they had crossed a clear legal line, as opposed to two people living together for a few months who might be partnered, but that would be very different from a lifelong partnership between two people, two men, two women, or a man and a woman who just had never gotten married. So it was more of a research decision. Who do you include in your sample and who do you not include in your sample? But we certainly give, you know, a totally equal weight to people who consider themselves in a lifelong partnership, but for whatever reasons, either political or whatever, have decided to not get married.
Jeff Greif and Mike Woolley, their book is called In-Law Relationships, Mothers, Daughters, Fathers, and Sons. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. To join our conversation about in-laws and the complexities of those very interesting relationships, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us at @midday_WYPR. Let's go to the phones to Richard, who's on the line from Baltimore. Welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks, Tom. I imagine this book was already written when COVID began and everything, but I have two daughters. They married, and I have great relationships with the son. So does my wife. But at the holidays, my family's all out of state, and my wife's family is nearby, but not as tight maybe as some families. So when it comes to the holidays, we had to find out a way to bubble correctly with one family at a time, but it very much stressed out everybody because when we decided one family would be Christmas Eve and the other Christmas Day, well, then that created complications for other people trying to bubble elsewhere with their family members. So anyway, any suggestions for how to work out this bubbling thing so that we can be with both sides of the family with whom we get along great?
Yeah, bubbling is not very conducive, is it? That's a good question, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Our research was finished just before then. We are, though, engaged currently in research on couples that we can get to at some other points. So we have a little bit of a finger on what's happening post-COVID. But I want to say more broadly that family relationships are inherently unbalanced. You cannot perfectly balance your in-laws. Somebody's going to live closer, be closer, have more contact. So the setup, even before COVID was there, for there to be some level of imbalance, we found that when there was the perception of jealousy within family members, that can cause, of course, real problems. And that's something that everybody struggles with, to not make their in-laws feel jealous. But yes, it's the fact that that pods are formed, and some grandparents are just going to be closer in different pods, are going to have more contact, or will get at this month, we'll get their vaccine sooner. perhaps, and thus will have a different level of access to their grandchildren and their children than another set who maybe are less ill or more ill or are in some different state and just don't get the contact. Family relationships cannot always be balanced, and they are often inherently, slightly, hopefully, and maybe in the worst case scenarios, grossly unfair.
Yeah, we have an email from Sarah who says, speaking of divorce, having three or four in-law pairs is probably pretty common. And that is, in fact, the case. You mentioned that in your book. Daniel in Pikesville says, have you explored cultural differences in in-law relations? For example, there's a Yiddish term for the parents of your child's spouse, but there's no such term in English other than your son's mother-in-law, for example. This could imply the assumption of a relationship in one culture that is not an expected norm in another. What do you think about that comment?
So that's quite interesting. You had two texts there. The first one was about divorce. And as soon as you said that, I was reflecting on the fact that we actually had some folks we interviewed who talked about, even though the couple divorced, the in-laws continued and maintained very positive relationships with the child-in-law. They liked that child-in-law previous to the divorce. And of course, when there's another generation of younger children involved, in-laws are motivated to maintain the relationship. In terms of culture, we did look a little bit at that, but I'm not sure we had the sample to really analyze subcultural groups, but of course, in-law relationships are going to reflect and emerge from a particular family and a particular culture or ethnicity's orientation toward family, toward multi-generational relationships, toward the roles that folks play in those. And I want to toss this to Jeff and see if he wants to add to that.
Yeah, let me just say about culture, one out of six marriages today are interracial and interethnic. So we get a chance to sort of think about the fact that there are blended cultures in that way that are happening in our society and are going to continue to be on the rise, we certainly think. So I think families that are open to others in general and families that are open to change in general are going to be able to be more flexible and to love the new people that are coming into the family or love the family that they are joining.
Dr. Jeffrey Greif and Dr. Michael Woolley of the University of Maryland School of Social Work at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. Their new book is called In-Law Relationships, Mothers, Daughters, Fathers and Sons. We'll have more on in-laws on the other side of this quick break. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us at @midday_WYPR. And by the way, this programming note from the Promise Heights Initiative at the University of Maryland School of Social Work. Next Monday afternoon, they will sponsor a public online conversation between Dr. David Satcher, the former director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and he's also a former Surgeon General of the United States, and Andrea Brown. She's the executive director of the Black Mental Health Alliance. They'll talk about stigmas around mental health in the African-American community. It starts at 2 o'clock next Monday afternoon, and we'll have a link to more information about that event on our website, wypr.org/midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're tuned to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking about how relationships with in-laws affect marriages and how age, gender, sexual preference, and other factors can make those relationships pretty complicated sometimes. In worst-case scenarios, in-laws can strain a marriage to the breaking point. As I mentioned earlier in the show, 18% of respondents in a study in Minnesota said that in-laws were the reason for their divorce. Of course, we could also heed Ruth Bader Ginsburg marital advice. She says it sometimes helps to be a little deaf. My guests are two members of the University of Maryland School of Social Work faculty, Dr. Jeffrey Greif and Dr. Michael Woolley. Their new book explicates the research they did with about 1,500 people who they surveyed and spoke with. The book is called In-Law Relationships, Mothers, Daughters, Fathers, and Sons. To join our conversation with Jeff Greif and Mike Woolley, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org, and to tweet us at @MiddayWYPR. Let's go back to the phones to Amy, who's on the line from Owings Mills. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Congratulations on the research and the book. It's such an exciting topic.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I had a question. What advice or maybe what recommendations or what have you gleaned from your research about renorming relationships with maybe healthier boundaries in place? I think the pandemic has given us all pause and an opportunity to kind of look at things with fresh eyes. And in my case, there was just a little work to be done on renorming some of the boundaries that had previously been set, but maybe not respected. I'll take my answer off air, and thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call, Amy. Renorming, that sounds like this is a person who's thought about this a little bit.
Yeah, that's a very thoughtful question. And this is Mike, and I'll throw in a few ideas that I've had and then see if Jeff wants to add to that. One of the things that's critical is the way communication happens. And without getting too far in the weeds about this, one of the things we've learned in the last 30 or 40 years from iconic family therapists, Murray Bowen, Monica McGoldrick, is how triangles form in families where three people are involved in a three-way relationship. And that the impact of any one person in that triangle affects the relationship between the other two. And here, the pivotal triangles we're talking about is an individual and their parent, who is then the parent-in-law to their partner or spouse. And so what we found is it's very important for a couple of things. For the couple to communicate clearly and be open with each other about what's going on. And that can maybe involve what this caller is calling renorming. If somehow the boundaries are out of balance or the communications are problematic, it should start with the couple. But then learning to communicate directly in those other legs of the triangle. In other words, in our research, in-law relationships were better when the child-in-law and the parent-in-law reported that they can go directly to the in-law to tell them something they're concerned about or communicate something important, and that they're not going through the third person in the triangle. So the couple communicating directly, and then the in-laws learning to communicate directly.
Yeah, Jeff Greif, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Michael hit on the main points. One has to consider the culture, both the idiosyncratic nature of one's family, as well as the cultural imperatives in which any family is living, about how open can one be with somebody else? How open can one be with an elder, for example, in expressing things? So I think whatever decision one makes, and we all make individual decisions about when do I keep my mouth shut and when do I open it up? And one of the key pieces of advice from all four of these groups, the sons-in-laws we interviewed, the fathers-in-law, the daughters-in-law, and mothers-in-law, is essentially you may have to learn to keep your mouth shut, but that's a very individualized decision that has to come from reading the other people in the family and one's own spouse.
I'm interested in the chapter that you had about how sexual preference and same-sex marriage couples have, in some cases, some unique challenges with in-laws. And there's a testimony, and the book is full of testimonies of people that you interviewed, and you quote them directly. This comes from a woman named Sarah. She's white. She's married. She's 57 years old. And she says, I think any person my child would marry would be very important to me because my daughters are very important to me, and the person they chose to be in a lifelong relationship with is definitely someone I want to embrace as family. We love Flora and we like her, but she has real struggles with her own parents And she's told us that we very much play that role of mom and dad. Her parents can't totally accept her being gay. I think they're working on it, but she feels a real loss. So, Mike Woolley, there are situations where your in-laws serve to some extent as sort of surrogate parents, and that can get complicated as well, can't it?
Yeah, several of the things that this caller or texter said resonates with stuff folks in the book said, talking about assuming this in-law child is going to be important, embracing this in-law child as a member of the family from the very beginning.
By the way, Mike, just to be clear, this was a person in your book. This wasn't a texter for today.
No wonder it resonated.
It sounded familiar because it was in there. Yeah,
right. No wonder it sounded so familiar. But yes, we also saw a pattern, not just this particular case in the book, of folks who had, Jeff talked before about histories and trajectories, family histories. If you have troubled relationships with your parents, that can predict troubled relationships with in-laws. But for some folks in the sample, this person and others, they found in-laws as a new opportunity to have a new kind of parental child relationship as adults that's different than the one they grew up with. And they embrace that.
You know, one of the things that we also found and talk about in some length in that chapter is that finally, it's usually the mother comes around to accept the relationship. Fathers tend to have a little bit of a harder problem. And once both parents are on board, there though may be other people in the extended family who are uncomfortable with a gay or lesbian marriage. And that's where parents are often caught between their siblings, maybe their own parents or friends. Many examples of parents who came to accept their daughter and son's sexual orientation and marriage, but had friends who did not, and they stopped seeing those friends. And I think that's what tends to happen as you go farther out of the parent-child relationship and the parent-in-law, child-in-law relationship.
We have an email from a listener named Michelle who says, my father-in-law has instructed my husband to pass family heirlooms to our children if something happens to him. We've been married 36 years. Am I wrong to think that they should really belong to us as a couple to pass on to our family as we choose?
Wow, that's a very awkward and difficult question. And I can tell you, I experienced something similar in my own family where my sisters were upset because something that belonged to my mother was passed down to my daughter. And there were sort of, jewelry. And speaking from a personal perspective here, I think people get to decide who they leave things to and why and how, and that what other folks have to do, that having the long view of family relationships and being open and tolerant. And what I often encourage family members to do when some member of the family, an in-law or a blood relative, does something you are concerned about, is step back and be curious about why they're doing this before you react and before you judge or condemn.
And just to add a final note, it also goes back to, again, it's hard to balance everything in a family. Somebody somewhere is going to have to maybe give a little.
We have an emailer who is unnamed who says, we call it mother-in-law's tongue. Try not to give advice unless asked. It's not easy, says this emailer. Tony emails, have you ever received any data on siblings-in-law and their relationships? I happen to like all of mine, and we're relatively close in age, but I'm not sure if that is the norm. So again, you wrote your last book about siblings and their relationships with each other. How about brothers and sisters-in-law?
Yeah, siblings can play a very important role in accepting the new in-law into the family, into his or her family. So we have a little bit of not exactly quantitative data, more anecdotal information that, again, open families that are less prescriptive are going to be more willing to let in people into the family. And very often this is an intergenerational pattern of openness that we've seen. So in general, it's great when it happens. It doesn't happen all the time because it may be that that new spouse is pulling away the sibling from the rest of the family. So the new spouse wants to have a holiday at that with the spouse's family. So the traditional Thanksgiving dinner all of a sudden has changed because the new spouse wants to spend Thanksgiving with her or his family half the time. So all these changes are the natural consequences of marriage and growing up and meeting new people. And I'm glad for the caller that, or the writer, that it really worked out well for her.
You write about in the last chapter about how to improve in-law relationships, and Jeff, I think it was you who outlined a few of those suggestions at the top of the show. But you say that you need ambivalence and ambiguity. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think those are natural consequences of life. There's a lot of literature on it. We talked about it a lot in our sibling book, that people establish loving relationships, but they also are sometimes tinged with ambiguity. You don't understand why someone is acting the way that they're acting. And there's also ambivalence. You love them, but they sometimes do things that maybe frankly drives you crazy. And part of growing up, and we saw mostly, I just want to say the message from our book is that a lot of these relationships work. There are some, as Michael said initially, that are fantastic, and this is the daughter or mother or son or father that I've always wanted. There's some that are terrible, but there's a large group in the middle where things are working, they're fine. We heard maybe from mothers-in-law that they walk on eggshells a lot with their daughters-in-law, and the daughters-in-law walk on eggshells with mothers-in-law, but they make this work to benefit the family and to stay close with each other. So that's sort of one of the key messages that we want to give to people. These can work, and more in mature relationships, you have to give up a few things sometimes, and keeping your mouth shut may be one of those things.
Yeah, and Mike, as we have about a minute left here, talk about the challenges that only children have because of the relationship that they may have with their parents that's a little different than if you're in a relationship with parents and you have, you know, two or three or five or 10 siblings, and how an only child, the things an only child should be on the lookout for when it comes to in-law relationships.
Wow, that's a terrific question. It's not a question we really looked at in our research, but thinking about the data we have, thinking about the analyses we did, my first response is that the in-law relationships are going to be somewhat intensified there. In each of the parents of the members of the couple. And in fact, I'm drawing that from the fact that we did ask folks, is this your first child to marry? Is this your second child to marry? Is this your first child to have grandchildren, your second or third child to have grandchildren? And the first children to get married, the first children to have grandchildren, the in-law relationships were more intensified. There was more energy and attention and effort put into them, which can mean both they can be terrific or sure. All that attention and energy can lead to struggles. So I would say only child needs to be carefully curate their in-law relationships.
Indeed. That's Mike Woolley and Dr. Jeffrey Greif. They are the authors of In-Law Relationships, Mothers, Daughters, Fathers, and Sons. Thanks so much, you guys. I appreciate it. Have a good
Thank
one. Stay
you,
safe.
Great questions.
Thank you. Fabulous questions.
That's it for us today. Tomorrow we'll have an update from the General Assembly. We're going to have an emphasis on tax policy. I promise to make it interesting. We're going to speak with two delegates and a local business owner who are with the Fair Funding Coalition about their priorities. Plus, Dr. Jen Chang joins us from Los Angeles with an update on what's going on there. Coming up in a couple of minutes, it's Here and Now. I hope you'll stay tuned for that. And tonight, I hope you'll download the Daily Dose. That's WYPR's compendium of local news. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
You're tuned to your NPR News station, 88.1 WYPR.